Okay, can you hope you can hear me? 1, 2. Hello. Is this okay, or is it? Do we need to find a different microphone? No, it's okay in here, but people are not. I haven't opened the chat room yet, so I'll go and do that in a second, and see what the feedback is from you guys online. Welcome to IMT 4116, Reverse Engineering and Malware Analysis. Today is workshop number one, and we're lucky to have NoCert visiting to carry us through this workshop. I put some material out on Blackboard, except the password to open it. We'll give that in a second. I'll also put it together with the material. Not sure how long this will take today, but we start with I've started a recording for 2 hours as normal, and will extend if necessary. But there will be lectures today, and then the lab today is beginning is your assignment. So that's the start of your assignment. And then after I see what's being taught and what we can expect, I'll give more details on what I want you to write in the assignment that is then due in. What did we say, 2 weeks? Yeah, the dates are online, so. All right, then I'm not gonna use more time and hand this over to NoCert. You can introduce yourself here.
Testing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This good? All right, cheers. All right, do that. This should work. It's not very comfortable, this thing. 1, 2, yeah, that's good. Good morning. This is my first time ever having a lecture, so I'm quite nervous, but I suppose it will do fine anyway. So the topic today is analyzing real samples. So I've got one sample that I chose to use. This is a real sample, and it's a sample from an APT that has targeted this nation, so please be careful when analyzing it. We're going to start with a fictive case, so this is typically how a case comes into our operation center. We get some information from a constituent telling us they have seen some suspicious email, or we have seen a trigger in our sensor system, and send that trigger to them, ask them to investigate it, and they usually find one email with an attachment or something like that, and send it to us for analysis. So in this case, we have just generated this standard fictive case. I'm not going to read this, because you can read it yourself when you're supposed to do the case. If you want to do, you can read it right now, but it's not that interesting in itself. The security unit of the employee's security team has extracted the attachment and sent it to us. So they want to know if there's any C2s, if it's bad, the first case, if it has any C2, what type of malware it is, the capabilities, and any indicators of compromise, the IOCs. They're usually the most important thing to look for, because those are the ones you can use quickly in an incident. So we also have the typical indicators we have to look for when we have a malware. You want to look for IP addresses, of course, domains, registry modifications. You want to look for file modifications, such as creating files, editing files, deleting files and whatnot. Mutexes and network patterns. There might be others as well. I can't remember them at this moment, but anything that you can search for on a host is something you would extract as an indicator and give to the incident team on site, so they can search the computers for them. We also have some traits we want to look for when we are analyzing the malware itself to see what kind of malware it is. So such as the crypto algorithms, different APTs tend to use approximately the same or small variations with their previous algorithms, so you can map them by that. You can see that, say that this is probably or most likely this APT or this attack group, the threat actors, by based on some of the crypto algorithms, because they tend to be custom for some reason. This also makes writing Yara signatures much easier, because you usually write Yara signatures on the crypto algorithms. Crypto keys, it's handy to have. If you extract a lot of them, you can use them in a brute force database or something like that. It's very good to have. If there's any similarities between previous samples you've seen, what kind of libraries it uses, what kind of exports, imports, the coding style is important. I usually recognize the different malware types based on the code style of them. So you can see that this is the X-Agent malware based on that particular indicator, or this is the YASI malware, or whichever. So that is very important to know. Also the compilation settings, they are very important, because sometimes when you open IDA, you have to change the compilation settings for IDA to analyze it correctly. And if you get a sample, let's say if you have a Delphi sample, or you have a sample that is compiled in different compiler, I don't know if you've seen the compiler settings in IDA, but if we open a file now, let's see, if we take this one, you have this button here, analysis enabled. If you have a sample you know that is not Visual C++, you should check this not to enabled, because then you won't mess up the interpreter of the IDA. Then you will get no sound, you will only get the data, no assembly code whatsoever. What you would do then is you go to the options and compiler settings, and you choose the compiler manual yourself, such as Visual C, Borland C, Delphi, either one of these. The Visual C is usually the default one, so if you know that it's compiling Borland, just do this. Click Borland. This is not Borland, of course, and you have to click this button for analyzing it the first time. And this will help a lot. It will choose the more correct libraries to load the signatures from based on the compiler settings, so you will get less junk code and more good code that has been renamed properly. Let's see, just put this down. Another thing you have to, you don't have to do it, but most people want you to do it, especially those who give you the tasks. They really want you to find all the capabilities of the malware, and they want you, and they don't want perhaps you to put it in a cyber kill chain, but they want to have it in a cyber kill chain, because this helps them identify where in the delivery process or in the attack process the threat actor currently are. So you have, let's see if we find a cyber kill chain. It's developed by Lockheed Martin. So I'm going to take off my glasses. It's not very comfortable with this thing in glasses. Let's see if we find a good one. Yes, sure thing, no problem. Come on, search for bigger ones. Is this readable? I suppose it might be readable. I don't know how you make it bigger, but it doesn't matter. Well, as you can see in the cyber kill chain, you have different, I don't know what you call them, levels or stages. As you have the reconnaissance, the weaponization, the delivery, the exploitation, and the installation, then you have the command and control and action on objectives. So if the capabilities of a malware is, for instance, very slim, so it's, let's say it's just a downloader, you would probably say that this is probably either between the installation or exploitation part of the kill chain. So then you know that if this is not a this has not been, what, how you would just say that, I think. Alright. If the target haven't been compromised before and this is the first attack on target, you could say that this is the installation and exploitation of the target, so you can be pretty sure, not entirely sure, that they have not reached the command and control and action of objectives, so they wouldn't have gotten all the files that they wanted or done what actions they wanted on the target yet. The thing is, often you will get this cyber kill chain multiple times during one incident, so you will have a downloader, it can go several steps down. You would could probably have some command and control, and then the threat actor would, for instance, look on the machines, find out, is this target interesting for me? If it's interesting, alright, let's download another malware that we've written and start over again. For instance, a rootkit or a more heavy-duty malware. So the cyber kill chain is one of the big things in the threat intelligence world. So that's developed by Lockheed Martin. It's very good to know. Everybody likes to know that one for some reason. Alright, let's go back here. So that's the typical traits to look for. If you can think of any other traits, it's always good. Everything that helps you identify malware is good to do. So, what we've got today, so it's mostly going to be our workshop. So, we've got this file. It is a bad file, so be careful with it. It is renamed as doc. It's a RTF file. Does anybody know why they would rename an RTF file as doc? If not, the reason is the RTF parser of the Microsoft Word, it parses differently than the most a lot of the other RTF parsers. It allows a lot of things outside of the RTF specification, so you have a lot of attack vectors here. So the reason is just they want you to open it in Microsoft Word. Alright, so this is a document like that, and the first thing we do when we acquire a document would be, alright, what kind of document is it? Is it a doc? Is it an RTF? If you take a look at it, you have to do that. I usually just look quickly in the hex editor, because that is easy. Alright, you can see that it starts with RTF. Anything that starts with these four bytes, the curly bracket and the RT, you don't have to have the F for MS Word to think of it as an RTF. So you could do other things here, just like RT, VPN or whatever really, and you would trigger the RTF parser of MS Word. So seeing that, I've built this image. This is a very good image. It took me 3 days to build. It has loads of tools. It's very handy to have, and lots of patches and whatnot, so to be very exploitable. It's very handy to have. Alright. Before we start doing this, I will tell a little bit around the system. There is a reason why I use a Mac and not a Windows system as a host. The reason is you'd never know if there have been used any exploits to escape from VMware. You do not really want to examine malware for Windows in a Windows VM on a Windows host, for reasons like the threat actor could probably want to know your work. So if they applied a rootkit hidden underneath an escape exploit, they could rootkit your host, steal all your analysis, all your Yara rules, spy on you and whatnot. It's still possible with a Mac, of course. They could make an exploit of Windows, escape into Mac with a Mac virus, but it's not as probable as having a Windows virus in a Windows environment. So usually you have different hosts. You could use Linux as well, but you have malware that supports all operating systems, but that's usually Python or JavaScript or something like that. So that's the reason why I use the Mac as a host. Also, it's very good on multiple monitors because you have independent desktops for them. Alright, so We saw that this one was an RTF. You can choose when you want. You can choose to join in or do this. You can do it when the workshop starts, or you can just jump through the last part of the workshop and start with the PFP file if you want to do that. But now we just use the RTF scan tool on this one. Yeah, the password. I forgot to write that in the email. The password is NTNU_infected. If that, it should work. I will test it myself just to be sure. Yeah. Let's see. It's all lowercase letters, so NTNU_infected. Infected is usually the standard password for malware, but a few antivirus engines have started unzipping things with the infected password and cleaning the files for you, so it's kind of useless now. I don't know why they would do that, but so I started using prefix and infected instead. I will test it to be sure that I have not done any misspellings. See, paste, extract here. NTNU infected. Show password. Up, right. Yeah, so that works fine. We'll have this as well. Right. So we continue with the RTF scan of the bulletin dot doc. So I stress again that this is a real sample, so if you run this on a host, you will probably get infected by a very aggressive APT. Do this in a secure VM. Alright, it doesn't do anything when you just run it like that. You have to run scan then fit, or scan brute if you need to brute force it. It is basically a small parser of the RTF. It just extracts. You can have binary embedded in RTFs by using /binary and writing the binary numbers, or you can have /hex or something like that and writing the hex values, and it will interpret it as hex or binary. Anyway, you get two files. One is very small, 2 kilobytes. Probably not a malware in 2 kilobytes, so we probably will ignore that. We'll just check it. So this is very small. As you can see, it has the doc file header, which is the doc not RTF header. It has the tail of a doc file, nothing more than that, just filled with zero, so not interesting at all. Just delete it. The other one is 177 kilobytes, that's more interesting. We can check it if we like that. Let's see. Hexedit is cool, it's a bit slow, but I like it. It's a doc file. It has a lot of information in it. Alright, let's just use the Office Mail Scan tool. Office Mail Scanner, the OEA document, and scan. Alright, so it says that it's malicious and everything, so that's probably a good indicator. It's not always true, but it's a good indicator. I usually just ignore it and look at the file. So we got a Shockwave flash file out of that. Right, let's see. So here we did. You will have all these in the presentation. I think you have gotten that in a PDF form. So you should have all these commands and tools explained there. Right, so we did this. We have not done this yet. I will show you that as well. So here's the extraction of the Office, the OLIA document that we just found, which dumps the SVF file that we need to further analyze. I can show you this thing first, because it's kind of interesting. I will do then a snapshot here. Take a snapshot. We're good. So take a copy of that file. The reason why I copy the file and not just open that file itself is some files modify themselves, so if I want to keep the original file, I would have to open the copy instead. bulletin. Some of them also check the names of the files. Yeah, I already had it there apparently. So it's a good idea to try to have the original name. It's not always needed. For these guys, it's not needed. Alright, so we run it in, for instance, Office 2007. Alright, so you can see a thematic. Any cyber threat intelligence person would be interested in a thematic because they could do some hunting or identification based on that, because you know that different APTs have different interests. So this is apparently a geopolitical one. Here you have to choose to recognize or not play the content. I will open one in Office 2013 as well and show you how it works there. But for this one I will first do this. I will do not allow it to play. Alright, doesn't play. Very good. We save the document, for instance. I like to save because we just opened an RTF. Let's try to make it a docx, because docx is a zip file. So save it as a zip file. Alright, good thing. Let's see if we extract the docx. See if we've got something cool. Content types, Word. Usually this is a good folder, the ActiveX one. 3 kilobytes, that's not very interesting. So we're just gonna ignore that, or we could take a quick look at it. For this moment, we will ignore it because it's kind of boring. We will delete that folder again. Delete this one. This is the reason why I took snapshots, because now I will let it to play. Took as well. Usually it should show up here. I don't know why I didn't do that right now. It's probably because I just resumed this one from something else. But usually you do get the C2 or the DNS here. I have already gotten the DNS from this one in a previous here, so it's stored in my DNS cache, so it wouldn't show up again. But if I now, because the malware has run on my system now. So if I now do like this, desktop, bulletin.docx, now when I save it, if I'm lucky, we should get a more interesting file under the ActiveX, which is 176 kilobytes. So that's different, it's way bigger than 3. If we take a look at this file, it's a doc file. Interesting enough. We could look at it manually, find something interesting, but we could of course just go into this folder again with this tool. CD paste, let's see, Office Mouse Scanner and ActiveX 1 bin scan. And we get the SVF file as well. So that's an alternate way of getting the SVF file. If the other tools doesn't work, it will allow the malware to run on the system. You could probably find new files on the system since it has run. For instance, a good search program could, I suppose, it might get it. Let's see, last modified, ActiveX, ActiveX, bulletin, bulletin, index. If it stores, I don't remember if this one stores the file or if it just runs it. It's not that interesting. Anyway, this is a good way of looking for files when it has run on the system. I know why this one didn't show it. It's kind of sad that this one didn't show it, but it's important to have a fake DNS on an iNet SIM connected to it. All different sorts of services activated. One of the other good things about an iNet SIM is that if your malware connects to a custom port, you can just use, and you know the response that it should get, or have an ID, or want to brute force the response, you can just open a netcat and script it or something and make it connect to the netcat. I've done such with typical malware that connects to GitHub or any Twitter feed to read the GitHub and Twitter feed and then use that as a decoding key or something like that. That's very handy. But now let's return to the snapshot itself. Let's see which one it was. Probably this one. There's a lot of thing happening on Slack today. Alright. So, alright, I was supposed to open that in the Office 2013 as well, so you can see what happens there. Paste item. So I have the file here now. It's a good thing I have a Mac, because this is a Windows virus. I can't be unlucky and execute it. If I try, it will just generate garbage. Let's try to snapshot this back as well, to see if snapshotting this back will help me with the DNS issues. And we run this snapshot. Yes, that's good. We run this snapshot back to a Windows 13, Office 13. Let's see, virtual network. See, I have multiple snapshots. I have, when I create these snapshots, I also always have the clean. That's a clean Windows install. I have one with all the free tools, which is approximately 200-300 different tools and patches to make the system more vulnerable and help me execute all kind of malware. And decode it, of course. And you have one with internet access where you can register and start your tools for the first time. Some of them need to be activated over the internet, so if you have to install a new one, you can just jump back to that snapshot, install it, activate it, and then make a new virtual network one after that. Alright, let's see. Let's copy this file again. Copying the bulletin, the original bulletin, to the Office 2013. Let's just test that this is connected to this one. Ping. I am fish, or something like that. I am fish has been answered into the INET sim. Alright, that's good. You can see all the tracks here. This also helps you decode any HTTPS, because you can see the, you can't see them in Wireshark, but you can see them in INET sim log. Let's try to open this, the Office 2013, because we've got a prompt in 2007. In 2013, it simply runs by itself. This is quite interesting. I don't know why. I haven't figured out why it. The only way I've figured out how to mitigate it is to disable ActiveX controls altogether. So if you, I don't know why it doesn't show up here now. Alright, it's not interesting. But yeah, it is probably the curse of teaching or something like that. Yeah. Might be all as well. Yeah. I can probably show you, I have another sample, we'll show you later. That probably works in, because if two samples break down on one day, that would be stupid. Right, so let's see the mitigation I found for this one. It is, was it here? I'm pretty sure, yeah. You kind of have to disable all controls without notification. The prompt me before enabling, it doesn't work on this one, it will auto-run anyway, so you have to completely disable it. So then any extension will be disabled. So that's one of the first times I've seen it's better to have the Office 2007. Usually the 2007 is the most vulnerable one, which will run any code. Same with, this is a good thing to take note of, the Adobe Reader 9.2. That is a very good version of Adobe Reader to be running in a dynamic environment, because it runs almost every single code there is. I think you can do 9.2 and 11.0. Those two would probably cover almost everything. Right. I don't know about this one. See, it's called YuxAnonymous Flag Server. It's kind of fun. You have the fake DNS is defaultly built into the INET sim by itself. You just write fake DNS. You also write accept dash all dash IPs, and it will treat all IPs as itself. That is very handy. You can just don't know if you see it, but it's written like that, or eyepiece. I don't know if you can read that, but it says accept dash all dash eyepiece. So write that into an inet submit and we'll treat all eyepiece as itself. It's very handy to have. Otherwise it would just take the domains and treat it as itself. And it also just, it listens on these ports, the 80, 21, 990, 995. So any custom ports you have to configure yourself in the inet sim configuration, add services, add netcat or whatever. Alright, so now I've shown you the dynamic running between 2007 and 2013. And we have the docx, the SVF file. Oh, come on. See if I can find the real one we were working on. It was probably that one. Snapshots are a good way of keeping malware by itself. Like having a new malware on one snapshot and another one on another snapshot, so you don't have to mingle them with each other, which helps you actually running them dynamically instead of interacting with it. With each other, that would not be good. If you do all statically and only statically, you can have all in one snapshot, but it's not recommended. Alright, so we have the SVF file that we found. We can open it just to be sure that it's an SVF file, the flash file, FVS. It's good. You can also have CVS, which is a compressed format. CVS is basically you have the same first 8 bytes as a header, just that it's a CVS, and the next ones are just setlib compressed. You can just take out all the bytes after the header, setlib decompress them, and then change to the C2 and F in the front and will act as a normal flash file. Right, so we have three tools. I have two tools. I have the Sylthink SVF decompiler, and I have the JPEX free flash decompiler. I use both of them. The Sylthink is a little better at detecting techniques to make it more difficult to read the code. I can show you that in not this sample, I can show it in the next sample that you have not been given. The JPEX is free, so we will use that here. Open that one in the decompiler. Very fine. You will get a binary at the end. So this is just one of the steps towards the binary. So we have the several functions here. Right, we have some init functions. We have some capabilities functions. You have the IL code in the right here. You have some, if you look at this one, you can see that this, I don't know if you see it right now, but after a little while you can see that this typically looks like some sort of crypto algorithm. And this one is quite interesting, because in this sample you have a crypto algorithm. This one, if you look at it more neatly, you will see that it is used to decode these three. These are compressed first, then decoded. You can see that it's compressed by the header here. It's the setlib header, the 78 and something like 9C00 or 1R of the value. All those are setlib headers. The cool thing about setlib, 7SIP does not support it by default for some reason. They often use just Python. I will show you how to do it in Python. The main pay is the most interesting one here, at least for this course. So if you look at the code, alright, you will see that it's just a few things. It creates a loader context with some parameters. The parameters is apparently created by this, which is a string made from reading all the unsigned bytes of lock 2, which is a byte array of pay. Pay is a main pay super. In flash, when you do a super, and you have a binary data, you will read the binary data. So essentially you load, here you load the binary main 22k into the parameter of the load context. So further down here you see that these three are being decoded based on which system you choose. It's not so important, it's not going to take go too far into it. And this one is pushed as a parameter into these, which is quite interesting, because in the second sample that I will show you, they also do that. And the cool thing is, this one came out in August. The other sample that uses this, it downloads an exploit known as the 7855 CVE, which was patched in October by Adobe, and it had a Windows component that was patched in November. So if this is the precursor of a zero day, it was available already in August, but it was patched in October or November, which is quite interesting. Alright, so we're just gonna take this one, because this is apparently the big one. All these that are small, you can see on the right side here, they are smaller. So this is the most interesting thing. So we're gonna take this one and we're going to export it. We want to have that data, alright. Taking this data, store it to the desktop. Alright, this is one of the good things about the JPEX decompiler, because it can do this. If we open this in the Sothink SVF, see, we have it here now. Come on, computer, be faster. We have the binary 22. Alright, that's not good. Alright, but it doesn't matter. I don't care. It's stupid, because this one, so often it requires you to reactivate it, so I've grown tired of it, so I just did cancel on it. The only big difference is you can't really copy the code directly if you haven't activated it. So if we open the SPF file, which I had here, this one, both of these decompilers require them to be renamed .sbf, so if they have not the extension .sbf, they will not open them. Take that into this one, open it, see the action, we see the M22P. It's kind of better looking. It is a better decompiler, because it will decompile things the other one can't, but we don't really have the binary blobs here, so how could we extract that? So that's the reason for having both of them, even though one of the other is the better one. Alright, we have the main 22pay.bin, which is the result of all this. I know when you want to take a break or when you don't take a break, but this is a good time taking a break if you want to take a break. Alright, so short break now, I suppose, around 15 minutes. 9:15, alright. Cool. Then?
Okay, welcome back. I have talked to, or we have talked to, the IT department, and the stream and the sound is not optimal. Unfortunately, they can't fix that for us right now, but they're aware of it, so next time we hope for better sound. I also got the feedback that there's something, that the picture is not optimal, so it's something with the stream itself, so it's not a matter of just changing microphone. So sorry for the inconvenience, and we'll decipher what he says afterwards. Okay, back to you.
Dup, 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 dup. Hello, hello.
No, this is not. See.
This is okay. No, it's a bit close. Let's see. That's better. Yeah, I hope so. Decent enough, at least. All right. No. Still too close. 1, 2, 3. Is this okay? Can we hear through the speakers? All right. Cheers. Good. Let's see. So we had the still too close. We had the main 22 binary, which we were going to look at now. First, we just check the hex editor. So we have the 789C as the header again, so you know that means it's setlib. You will recognize such after a while, hopefully. You will already recognize it now. That's fine. So what we do then is we will go to folder on ls. I have ls on this Windows because I just placed the bat file in a path directory. Call it ls and added the dash r to it, so I also read the alternative data streams. Just hand up and just show it because it's cool. Let's see if I have it. It's not. Tools. Ls. Yeah, the ls bat. It's handy to have a tools category. Hopefully with the tools as well. Just echo off dir r, you get ls into Windows. It's very nice to have. Jesus Christ, the microphone is sensitive. Alright, so we find it. Go to binary data. Nice. Alright, we have that file. Python. Alright, so we have the Python here. So you're simply just going to decode that into, let decompress it. So we import the setlib. This is Python 2.7, not 3.4. There is one difference in 3.4 or a 3 to the 2.7 when it comes to this. We'll tell that in line 3. So we have file equals open. Let's see, 4 main. Can I do tab? No. Pay.bin. Is that a comma? Yeah. Read that as binary. Fine. And we do the data file read. This file dot read. Fine. And we simply do, you can see that the decompresses the data, then do the byte array. This is the difference between Python 2.7 and Python 2.3 point something, guys. In Python 2.7, the setlib library, it requires you to input a string and not a binary. As in 3, it requires you to input a binary. So here we have the file read as a binary string and not a binary itself. So you have the binary read as a string. So we go to data equals byte array, setlib.decompress. See, that's good, and now we can simply close the file and write a new file. Just close file equals open fish. Is it called fish? B. Right. File. See, we have the file on the monitor here. Fish. Right. Data. File. Close again. Very small script, you have the entire script here, very simple. You also have that PDF available, so it's not that important to show that right now. And you have a file. This is interesting because the file starts with 55.8b. Does anybody recognize the 55.8b.ec? If you do not, this is one thing you should always look for when you see a binary. It basically means push EBP, move EBP, comma ESP. So you can see that is the start of a function. So in fish, we can take that into IDAPRO. We disassemble it as 32-bit code. Alright, so we have some code here. Push EBP, move EBP, ESP, setting up the stack, and we have a lot of strings down here. So apparently we do have something that resembles a shellcode that is being run from the, if you remember, we had this entire binary added as a super into a probable exploit or something like that. So this is going to be run. That's quite interesting. We can try and run it if we want to, but alright, you have two ways of running it. Go to play here again. So here we go again. It says everything here, so you don't have to remember it. You can just read on the slides. Shortcut, blah blah blah. Right. So debugging it is a very simple way of doing this. We're going to do that here because analyzing it will take way too long. So that's not very useful right now. So you have two ways of debugging it. You have one way where you can create a PE file, a complete PE file out of shellcode. That is what we will show you today. It's very handy to know. Or you can use the box debugger. The box debugger is basically it's an emulator. So it can emulate basic Windows functions and basic Linux functions. I don't know if it can do the Mac O. But I suppose it can. I haven't tried it, so I can't say for sure. It would be interesting to try. The thing about Box, it's pretty cool. The Box, you have to install it. It's very handy to have. Always have Box installed in a system. It will use the starting point wherever your cursor is. So if my cursor is here, this is where it will start debugging from. That's the handy part of that. That's the reason why you can debug shellcode with Box. What we're going to do then is, by the way, alright, we'll share that afterwards. We will take this file. We have a tool, the MASM, the Microsoft Assembler 32. I have it here. I can show you tools afterwards. There was a question during the break about tools. How do I make them look as neatly on the toolbar as here. There's a trick to that. I can show you that as well afterwards. And we have the MASM, which is here. By the way, always have all five browsers installed because some malwares, they tend to use different browsers. So if they inject into a specific browser, it's very handy to run that specific browser when you're dynamically looking at it. So the MASM editor. It's very cool. So we open it, the folder at least. If we open the MASM itself, it is basically an assembler for you. So you can write assembly code here and you can create a PE file. What we got is shellcode, so we do have the interesting things already. Inside the MASM32 folder, you have a tools directory and a tool called, so you have several tools there. You have a tool called bin2db. The bin2db is a tool that basically gives you a decimal string representation of a binary. So if we take this tool, we go into the folder with the fish that we generated. Remember, that is a shellcode. We open it. You see db85, 139, 236. We then open this in a hex editor and see we have six, no, that should be 55, right? 55, 8b, blah blah blah. Simple way of doing that is having Python write 0x 55 85 0 0x 8b and you have 139. So you see, it's just a string representation of the decimals of the binary. That's nice to have. So you're also being given, and this one, you have a file. It is in the zip file that I gave you. You will have the you will have the code down here, which is basically a very simple header for a PE file. So we take that one. I do have it in the workshop here, massenstub.txt. Alright, it's not good looking in Notepad. Use Notepad++ because you have a lot of cool tools like the JS format. So if you have the JavaScript code, you can just click the JS format and it will neatly arrange everything for you so it gets pretty. You can also decode and encode base64 and URL decodes on the fly. Very handy when deobfuscating Python code and JavaScript and whatnot. But we copy this code into another tab. Right. We have this one. Just copy all the data from bin2db, remember it's called bin2db, from the tools directory of the masm32, masm tools bin2db, bin2db shellcode. Alright, good, and one of the downsides of masm is that it requires you to be very specific. You have to save, so when you save a file, you have to, it's called just it, you have to call it .asm. If you do not call it asm, you will bug it, and you will have to create a new file with a different name than the first name. Otherwise it won't compile. Just build all, bam bam bam, you get the object file and the exe file. So, take the it.exe, open this again, we analyze this and enabled. Alright, sure thing, this is not Borland, so that's okay. So we do have an entire PE file. So see, very simple, it has start as an export. It's the only export it has. It has no imports. Alright, that's curious, why doesn't it have an import? So it has a lot of code. I'm not going to analyze all this code right now. Gonna quickly look at it in the decompiler. I don't think you have access to this one yet. It costs around $1,000 a year per license. It's very handy to have. As you can see down here, kernel32.dll. Currently here you have some Unicode because you have zeros in between and whatnot. So you have a lot of things happening here. Actually, just hide cursor sometimes. Try to learn how to just leave the cast on because they will help you, but I really like them because it's ugly. You have the readfs word, which is quite interesting. If you don't know what the readfs word is, you have the fs30, which is basically a pointer to part of the PE structure, which is the tab, the process environmental block. This in the process environmental block, which I can show it. It has defined a lot of different variables, a lot of structures, information about the file itself. It's very handy. You have all, for instance, all the loaded libraries in here. So if it needs user32.dll, that would be inside. It has a pointer to pip loaded data, which is exactly that, the loaded libraries, which is another structure, as you can see here. This site is called ALDE-ID. It's a very good site, you should try to use it. ALDE-ID and OpenRCE, very good sites. You can write them on the board later so you'll remember them. So it reads the pip, it reads the can see if we go to the pub. Number 30. This is supposed to be... the number 30 is the pub itself. So, because it reads, the FS words read from the tab. And from the tab, number 30 there is the pub. And 1 and 0C is the pointer loader data. And you have in the pointer loader data, it reads number 14, which is here again. List entry in the memory order module list, which is basically one of the lists that hold the loaded DLLs, and it takes one of them. Which one, I'm not sure right here. The interesting thing is that it reads a PE file. So we structure this up as a PE file, which is nice to have. Good thing, because it helps us decode the code. This takes a long time to do. This one takes a couple of hours, I think, if you have to do it. So I'm not going to do it here. But when we run it, we will eventually stop at this point. Down here, we have a tag, which tells a crypto loop to stop when it reaches its tag. We have a location, which points to itself, or just after itself, which is quite interesting. We have this code. If you search the web for this code, often you end up doing this because this code is very old, and you find that this is the code for the MarCL Twister pseudo number generator. So it's basic code you can find online, and you will find that this value is the seed key. So when you have a pseudo number generator and a seed key, you basically have a fixed set of following integers, so you know how to decode something, it will always be the same. So this one, it modifies its own code on here until it reaches this with the use of the MarCL Twister with this as a seed key. So we're just going to run this because we have the Win32 debugger now. We got that since we made the PE file, not just add the shellcode. Try to run it, see what happens. Alright, run. Bam, it crashes at some point, because we can't do this, the EDX and the debugger, it wouldn't allow us to change our own code, so you just can't really change the run text segment. The interesting thing is, when you have come to this point and have actually done the analysis, you will see that the decoded D word will be stored in the ECX register. So what I wrote to save the decoder data here is one of the neatest and coolest dynamic tricks that I know of in IDA. So you create a breakpoint here. You can see that here, we have that, find that, create a breakpoint, and we have a code. This code works for this sample, so you can do this yourself if you want to. So we're going to do that. Alright, let's find this code. I don't know if I include that in here, or if... Alright, so we have to copy it from here again. Alright, so you can see that is the last slide. So when we're finished with this, the workshop itself will start after I tell you a few small things. Then we'll be lazy, we'll copy all this text, okay. Generating this code was a little bit try and fail, but it was less try two times than fail one time, or something like that. So we edit the breakpoint. We're not going to break on the breakpoint, we want it to run. Alright, that's cool. What will happen then? It will not stop, it will continue running. But we will create a Python script in here. So IDA has the capability of running Python scripts. If you Google IDA Python, you will be able to find the entire API, which is very huge. You can create a lot of links. So basically this one, it reads the ECX value. You will get the 0.0x as well, so I just cut that one by the two here. And you also get the age at but yeah, just to note that it's just a hex that is the decimal value. I will cut that to just get the hex itself. And that is 4 bytes, because the D word is 4 bytes. And the endianness will be reversed, so here I just reverse the endianness. I create a byte array from the hex values, and I store it as a file with the append option. Alright, so you're going to do that? Fine. But it still will crash when it reaches this point. What I will do then is I will create a breakpoint for that, stop it, I rerun it, it stops at that breakpoint. Alright, what we do, we will remove that new breakpoint, we will check that the previous breakpoint that we wrote is okay. Run edit, it's not going to break on it, it has this code. Alright, it will crash here, so we will enable some opcodes. Now you see the opcodes as well, so you have 890A, which is the opcode for this instruction. What we're going to do, we're going to go to patch program, change byte, and everybody here is familiar with the NOP instruction, I suppose. It's the no operation instruction, basically means jump to next instruction, do nothing about anything. So we NOP out that part. This is eventually going to crash, but what we know at this point in the code, the ECX will hold 4 decoded bytes. And what we have written in the Python is reading those 4 bytes and appending them to a file, changing the endianness. So you run that, bam 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 bam, it's running for a while. Let's see if we can find a folder it runs in. It's not here, it's on the desktop. Yes, we have the out. As you can see, the out is currently increasing in size. Let's wait until the shellcode crashes, because the shellcode will crash now when it's intended to run, because it will run a decoded part, but that part will not be decoded because we have knocked out the decoding, and well, we knocked off the saving of the decoding, so it will just run gibberish, but we have the decoded part itself in the PE file. So this is pretty cool. Alright, so you go. COO5. Alright, that means access denied. Alright, that's fine. Stop this file. Finish with it. We take a look at the out file we generated. It's very cool. We have an MSET file. Complete MSET file. Isn't this pretty neat? Really love this. This is why I chose this sample, because it's very neat. I like it a lot. Complete PE file. This file, you have this in the workshop as well. It's called the dropper. So bulletin is the first one. We have the SBF. Then we have the shellcode. Then we have the dropper. We also have this basic struct decode, which is a very small sample you can work on if you want to. It helps you structuring up things. I can give you the source code for that if you want to match what you see in IDA with the source code. Right, so we take the out file. Where do we have it? Yeah, can you see? Right, complete PE file. So DLL entry point, so DLL file. It has some imports. Nice. I will not show you this here, but you for now will show something in the assembly that it takes. So you should note this address so you don't have to look it up that quickly, know that slowly later on. Let's see, you write 18E4. 18E4. That's good to have. Makes it easier to start doing wrapper. So here we do have. If you look at this in the assembly view, you can see
call thing. It moves a lot of things into EBX, different offsets. This basically looks like a lot of this could be a structure. I suppose you have been to structures already, so this is a nice task for that. You can see that in this assembly window as well. We have the structures. It's a full 16 bytes, 10 hexadecimal bytes. You can see the generation of the structure. So what we'll do, we'll just create a new structure. It's 16 bytes. So it's 10-4. And create the structure down here. If somebody of you don't know how to make a structure, please say so and I will show you how to make it again. Then we just struct as the new operator gives you a pointer to a structure. You have to make sure you make it a pointer. Now as you can see, we have field equals something, field equals something, field equals something. So this is the nice part of the decompiler, which makes it a lot of easier to analyze malware. You can't really analyze big malware without it, because it really takes forever to do simple things. Here we have a lot of data. Here we have less data, which is maybe a number 40. So if we count here, we will see that the data length here is 11, which is that. Here, if we count here, it will be 40, which is here. So we can have an hypothesis that that is a key. That is a key length, this is data, and that is data length. That is a possible hypothesis for this. And you can see this is being reused further down, 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 and passed into this one. Here we can see a XOR with an AL, blah blah, so that's bytewise XORing. So that's probably a crypto loop. This one, throw something in here which is the same structure. With that structure, see, it takes the key length, the key, and it modulates that with the key length. Basically means if the data that is input to it is longer than the key length, just start reading the key from the beginning again. So it just takes the key going over basically each byte of the key is modulo to each byte of the same size of the set. So that one is very simple. This is very typical for this APT. It's very, very simple. 11 key length or 13 key length. So this decoding this one is basically the task you're going to do. That is the intended workshop task. You can do the entire thing if you want to do that. It's a very good exercise, because it's very typical for what we actually meet out in the field. Right, so any questions to that before I show a few things else? Is all good? Yeah, check online. There's quite many steps to get the PE files, but sometimes you have PE files inside PE files inside PE files inside PE files. This one actually has in the dropper, don't get confused when you do it, but in the dropper itself it has the bulletin dump as well in it. So it has both malware which is dropped and bulletin dump. Alright, so basically I'm going to show another malware, which this is called dealerschoice.a. If you Google that, you will find several reports on it. Try to do it yourself before you do a lot of the reports, because as they will not show you how to do it, they will give you some answers. But it could be handy to use. You always do that in the field. You cooperate with things, you look at sources, but you still have to do a lot yourself. The other examples I'm going to show you is the dealer's choice B, which is the newer version of this one. So in around September, it was the first, because we had this big wave of attack with a 0 day before the patch came out, which I believe might be the same one that is in this one. And I'm going to show you how to decode that one, because it's a little bit different. It's that is the development of the SPF file, because this one has everything embedded in it, while the Visual Studio B is a downloaded SPF file itself. So any open questions before I show the file? No open questions? Alright. You had one question during the break. It's about these nice little tabs down here, because I have a lot of tools. I can show you some of the tools if you want to know which tools they are. To create this neat little tab, there's a one trick in Windows. You have to take the taskbar onto the left side. It's very important actually, otherwise it will be skewed. So you will get half an icon on the right side of it. You create a folder. For me, I created a folder in Documents, for instance, LPE Tools. And create a toolbar, new toolbar, link that to this one, whilst the taskbar were on the left side, and then it just moved it to the right side. It's loads and loads of tools that are handy to have, and there are the correct versions of programs to be as vulnerable as possible. Also have tools like the Delphi decompiler, helps you when you look at Delphi files, because they are programs to look at. Bytecode Viewer is probably one of the better ones for disassembling the Java class files. X2Out, which is basically if a file has been created without you to it, gives you neat code. It's a lot of code though, it's neat. DNSpy is one of the good ones for doing C#.NET decompiling. IDR is another good one for Delphi. Office is a parser for office files, SSB is the same, LSpector, NetReflector also for C#. And the PDF screen dumper is very good for PDF files. That, save, decompiler, blah blah blah, agent ransack. Yeah, you should always have a good search tool on the guest OS, so you can search the file system manually and not rely on Windows itself. We also have the Win API override. Override some API functions if you need to do that. You have the Chimera to look for such overrides. Flash debugger. You have Office, of course. You have all the different browsers, different edit tools, file insert, code blocks. Often you end up using Visual Studio as well. But all right. Voila, we have the PDF file. So that one is done. Let's see if I find the... Oh, I'm not sure you guys want. Find the deals choice. So I probably have that. Probably have that on another snapshot. Just make some new snapshots for this. It's this one. Stupid names. Another good thing about Mac is I'm not really a Mac fan, but I started using Mac when I started malware analysis, the first time actually, is that you have the Little Snitch Network Monitor, which is a outbound firewall, so you have to accept all outbound traffic manually. So if you get also you have this microphone and webcam indicator, so if it activates you will see that the microphone is activated. So, this is the one I want. The reason why I have this is because I created something called a Yarrow rule. I will show you a Yarrow rule afterwards. Here I have a file. This is another sample. This is the dealer's choice B. These were sent out to very many different countries at the same time in hopes for catching a lot of fish. We can do the same thing about this one, the office mask, and we get out a lot of stuff. Can do it quickly. Office scanner. 1F8, isn't that called? Oh, I'm in this beat. I wonder what this would be. Office mask scanner tells you that it's RTF. You know, to use the RTF scanner. Office mask scanner, LME, again, scan. There we go, we have the USB file. Which is much smaller, it's just 5 kilobytes. The other one was around 190. Hey, you will see the difference between the free and the non-free tool. GPX. Blob. This one, it has a lot. This is an ugly loop. Look at this. So many push pop, go to blah 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 blah. Very good. It's not very difficult. It takes time. It's time consuming finding the right decoding order here. But it has the main 64K. Interesting enough. Right. So we open this in the sofa. The reason why something is so fantastic, even though it doesn't have the binary blobs. Now you can recognize the crypto thingy very easy. It's the almost the same one as the previous one. This one has different numbers in it, but it drops another SVF file. I'm not going to show you how to do that because I've created a tool. It's one of the cooler tools. This one has several more steps than the one I showed you, but I wrote this Python script. USB extract, it's not very big. See, that. Bam, bam, bam. Put it in that folder. Yes, we remove everything except that original file because we don't need any. We write Python, DCB extracts, 1F something, bam, malhost, securityprotectingcorp.com. Right, dealer's choice B found. So this is a very nice script created. It gives you all these steps. In this malware, they are also encrypted, all the steps, they are compressed and encrypted. So this one decrypts and decrypts them for you. Shows you the interesting part of creating tools. People really want to have extractors. So this is the script itself. You can see see the security detection core. Connects to the C2 several times, getting keys. If you look at this triple loop, this is exactly the same as in DLSTRUST-A. And this is the triple loop that is run on the function here, the exploded function. So this is the function where it downloads the zero-day exploit code. So this is one of the reasons I think that the exploit is also in the DLSTRUST-A, which is cool, because it has the same triple loop connected to it and everything. I also have the same one for pushing the PE file that is downloaded, it's the payloaded, into that exploit code. Very, very cool. Alright, so I've shown you the value of creating an extractor. Everything scales very fast, and you get everything ready. So the task is basically do the dropper, get the drop file. The dropper, it will drop to one file, you can make it drop two, you can make it drop the bulletin. It will drop xEventLite or setUploader, which is a download in itself. It profiles the victim and it downloads the real malware. Right, so if there's not any more questions, just do that and take a break, or yeah, we will be here. I forgot one thing, which is kind of important. Yeah, take that first in a way. I mentioned something called Yara rules, because I found this file because of the Yara rule. Alright, so if nobody of you ever seen the Yara rule before, they look something like this. Is very simple. So this is a test rule that I've created to find example. As you can see, there's basically a lot of decimal values. You can also write strings. You can write for instance, let's see, do that again. Where is that one? A2, let's call them A1, A2, you can call them whatever you want. Fish bones. You can nominate that it should be a wide character, or it should be non-caps or whatever. You can nominate such things afterwards. Condition, okay, you can do logic as well, so you can do mathematical logic, you can do e-file logic, whichever logic you really want to know. Just Google Yara, you will see the documentation online. So this is very valuable. The condition part of it is very, very valuable. Finding these, I tend to like these better. A lot of the Yaras you will find in reports usually use a lot of strings, because they are easier to find. Some malware authors leave cookies behind, making their malware easy to spot. Not all of that. This one is for a specific crypto loop. You see, I have wildcards. Each of these is 1 byte. As you can see, you can do nibbles, so half bytes. It's very handy if you have registered jumps, or if you really don't care which register is used, just use a nibble, so it takes all the registers. Finding these, you do in NIDA. If you look at, see if you find the crypto loop for this one. We go down here, we have a crypto loop here. We have an XOR here, as well as here. Right, so you can see, because I have enabled the number of opcode bytes to 8, it's good. Stack control is good to have as well. You can see the opcodes are here. So basically, they map into what you would write into a Yara rule. So here you could probably write something like, for this part, if you really just wanted that part, which is not so good because it's very small, so a lot of things will map from that. The Yara rule here would probably be something like 8A00 is not that interesting. 32.01 is not that interesting. 88.03 not that interesting. Maybe C3 is interesting. Right, so yeah. new, good like that. Condition, if you only have one, just write any of them or all of them. Any of them works, all of them works. Or you can do like A, like that, is bigger or smaller than 4, which means it will occur in the file more than 4 times. Or you can do like that, and operator or operator, so you can nest them in parentheses and such. You can create all the kind of logic really want to. It helps you when you have URLs, it helps you to identify samples on bigger sets. It is what it's going to do. If you have local sets, or you can do it in an email client. The server, take the URL off every file that comes down. If this is bad, if this matches the previous created URL, I'd mark it as, let's see, triple something evil malware thing. But now you have seen a basic Yara structure. You can write your name here as well. Yara. It's a very good exercise. You should always try to write a Yara on the malware you see. It's one of the really must have things. It's not super must have, but it's must have. So the C2 addresses, the IP addresses, such very important if the incident team can handle them. The Yara is very good for hunting new malware. Anything else I should say? Alright, he asked me what we should start on after the break. We should start on one of two files, or three files. It's up to you, to be honest. We have, alright, see, this is a different snapshot, so let me take this file again. The workshop one, which you have. One NTNU _ infected. Alright, so if you want to do everything that I just did, except the dealer's choice B, so everything in the slides, you can start on bulletin. The goal of bulletin then is to find the dropper. So bulletin, SVF, then shellcode, then dropper. If you want to start on the PE file, you start with the dropper. The dropper will decode parts and eventually drop a malware. So the task is basically finding the malware. This C2 address, if you want to do it dynamically, the C2 address is in the dropped malware, which the dropper drops. But that one is too big for this workshop, because you would need a lot more time to do that. So I think you should just do the dropper. If you want just to do the PE file, if you need basic, get a basic intro to structing things first, do the basic struct and decode, which is a very small script. As you can see, created it. It gives to the main. It has one of these. This is basically a constant char array in C++. So this is how constant char arrays look in IDA if you do not have an MX enabled in the compiler. This is very simple because you see the book usually uses ECX as a folder for this course for structures and such. The malware does not always do that, it uses VCI, EBX and whatnot. ECX, so this one, very simple. You can see that it creates things. Sets, it puts things into the structure. It has some handling of it, so it does something with it. And this is just printf. This one is not printf. This is a XORing thing. Here you see the modular thing again, which is usually always the size of the key. So this is a very good simple exercise to start with, but the main thing is the dropper. Alright? Yeah?
Sure.
No problem.
Okay, just to summarize that, thank you by the way. I will write this up in Blackboard too, so you have it in writing what you supposed to do. But if I understand you correct, and if I misunderstood, please correct me. Main thing for the assignment, because that's what you start on the lab now, the assignment that you have to turn in 2 weeks, I think. The main thing is to do the PE file that that you find in the dropper, and find the IOCs. Maybe you can show you had a list of in the beginning of so you use the list of IOCs that he had in the beginning of the presentation. Try to document as many as possible. Try to write a Yara rule for how to detect this. And then I think the extra work, if you want to, you could also include how you got to the dropper, but I think we're going to say that that's optional. But like you said, I would recommend trying it yourself, but before the assignment, I think the IOCs for the PE file and the YARB would be okay for now. Anything else? Or is that... That's good. Then... that's what we're trying to do. We start with that 15:15. I will write this up on Blackboard so you have it in writing. And we will stop the streaming now. And if there's a lot of interesting question that shows up during the lab here in the classroom, I will start the stream, let's say the last half an hour, and we'll repeat some of the key points in a recording for people online. That's only if there are interesting things that show up. If not, you're on your own. Ask me questions in Blackboard, and good luck.